Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Western politicians and their pliant media have a single and terrifying message. If Russia is allowed to survive, then democracy and the West itself will cease to exist. Apparently, we live in the most existential of times. In reality, the West is destroying the world order it made. Crosstalking globalization, I'm joined by my guest, Ramzi Barood in Seattle. He's a Palestinian author and journalist. In Washington, we have Nebojsa Malic. He is a blogger and columnist. And Atlanta, we cross to Ben Swan. He's an investigative journalist and founder of Sovereign.media. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ramzi, you got up the earliest, so you get the first question here. Much appreciated. Literally on the other side of the world for me right now. If I can kind of paraphrase, and I'm just a talk show host here, but it seems like the West is willing to destroy the rules-based order to save it, okay? Because everything they're doing is contradictory to what they claim is a rules-based order. Go ahead, in Seattle.
Well, thank you, Peter. I think this is really the point, is that is this, what they refer to as rules-based order, was it really ever a rules-based order? So, and the key word that you used, claim, I think it's always been a claim, and I think it's always been a fraudulent claim. The fact is, what is so upsetting to the Washington consensus and to NATO is the fact that after the collapse of the Soviet Union, we are seeing some kind of resurgence on the global stage. It turned out, as Fukuyama has said once, that this is the end of history. Well, it turned out that history did not end, and that history is in constant motion. And we have countries such as Russia, China, and India, and others who are willing to challenge this global hegemony. Now, the Americans are insisting that they want to take the world back to some sort of a time in which the rule of law mattered and democracy was, you know, reigning supreme all over the world. Well, could someone please just highlight any example of this claim? Where was American rules when they carried out the invasion and genocide in Iraq, or their wars leadership from behind, if you will, in Libya or Syria, their support for the war in Yemen, and there are numerous other examples. So if this is a rules-based order, well, these are terrible rules that really, really should be changed.
Yeah, well, some people make the rules and other people have to abide by them, apparently. Nebojsa, if I can go to you in Washington here, the same question but asked in a different way. Is this iteration of globalization reached its limits? Because it seems to me that the Western powers, they know that they've hit a brick wall when it comes to Russia, and we can look at the example of what's going on in Ukraine, and they need to tighten down the hatches, as it were. It's either you're with us or you're against us here, because they know that they've reached the limits of their power. And so getting all your ducks lined up on your side is the first order before they go on with the, I guess, globalization 2.0, which means to break down the rest of the world. I mean, I think it's widely believed by people that are thinking is that Russia was supposed to be the first pin to drop, then it was going to be China. It didn't work out so well. Go ahead in Washington.
Not at all. I would actually say that the biggest tell of where the West is right now is the kind of rhetoric and the kind of policy prescriptions that they were using back in 1999 against Yugoslavia, against Serbia. This is literally the same exact foreign policy and military policy as was practiced back then. It's not very surprising because Joe Biden is nearly 80, the leadership of the Democratic Party, and more importantly, their foreign policy leadership is just as geriatric, so to speak. And they literally don't know anything else. They don't have any other vision. They're still talking about rules-based order, democracies, you know, united international community and all this stuff. The world has moved on. It's been 20 years, more than 20 years. And people have paid attention. Economies have shifted. Trade has shifted. Power balances have shifted. Military affairs have shifted. There's been weapons development that the U.S. military doesn't even understand. And so they're clearly misunderstanding completely the global situation and trying to just paper that over with narratives. on one hand, I just want to kind of shake them up and say, do you even pay attention to things? But on the other hand, I remember that great quote attributed to Napoleon, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake, because they're really making a colossal mistake.
You know, Ben, basically the same question to you, because when we look at this whole sanction mania and secondary sanctions, that's alienating almost the entire world, okay? And looking at commodity prices and all that, countries have to take in consideration their own national interests, not just to make Washington and Brussels happy. And this is the brick wall that they're hitting, okay? And on top of it, they're hurting their own populations. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, they are hurting their own population. Certainly here in the United States, our population is hurting terribly because of these sanctions. And we're being told over and over that it is somehow a no to democracy, right? It is our duty, it's our responsibility on the world stage to have gas prices that are astronomically high, for the price of food to be skyrocketing. And in fact, we are watching the Biden administration right now putting out new numbers about inflation and the rise of costs and warning in advance that they're going to be extraordinarily high, right? And so the idea that this is all coming about as a result of Ukraine is nonsense. But one of the misnomers of sanctions has been that there was going to be this move that came about as a result of having the international community, all of it, step up alongside the United States and step up alongside Ukraine, and that Russia would be, in the words of President Biden, would be isolated and alone. But the problem is they're not isolated and they're not alone, because China never came on board with this. India never came on board with this. Brazil's never come on board with this. The BRICS nations, the largest economies in the world outside of the United States, have all said, we're going to take a pass on this. And so the ability to actually have teeth in those sanctions has not been what the Biden administration thought it would be, simply because other nations around the world are standing together to say, this idea of bullying the rest of the world through sanctions has come to an end.
Well, I mean, isolated and alone. Ramsey in Seattle, I think of Europe as being isolated and alone as we go through this here. I mean, it's really remarkable, the self-inflicted wounds over something called democracy in Ukraine, which is a joke on its face, but we'll have that as a different topic another time. But, I mean, essentially what Western polities are being asked for the first time since the Second World War, choose between gasoline and food. Is that a choice that people voted for? Go ahead, in Seattle.
Well, this is the irony of it all. This idea that sanctions are going to work. Usually sanctions are used for two main purposes. Number one, regime change. And we know that this is not going to be happening in Russia anytime soon. Nor did it actually happen in Venezuela, Iraq, Libya, or Syria. And the other reason is containment, is to isolate and to so-called contain certain countries so that their ideologies, their ideas, their revolutionary rhetoric does not spill into other countries. Now, this is not going to work in the case of Russia at all. I visited Iraq in the height of the American sanctions in the late 1990s, and I remember I went to buy a cup of coffee and I had to pay with several millions of Iraqi dinars because the dinar was devalued to the point that people would not count their money anymore. They would actually weigh them
yep.
on a scale. Now, they thought the same thing is going to happen in Russia, that the ruble is going to collapse and the American dollar is going to once again emerge dominant. But that actually did not happen. The ruble recovered and is now stabilizing. So if that tool, which is the most powerful tool to isolate countries, is not working in Russia, well, what else do they have in their disposal? What can they actually do to isolate Russia? I don't think that's really possible at all. In fact, the opposite is true.
You know, Nebojsa, sanctions were supposed to be a deterrent. It didn't work. Sanctions after the conflict in Ukraine started was supposed to change behavior. Hasn't changed behavior. The only thing that's changed is the de-dollarization of the global economy. That's what's happening. Nebojsa, go ahead in Washington.
The whole thing has been basically them holding a pair of deuces and claiming to have a royal flush all along. I mean, Biden's jumping in its own mouth every day. He says, oh, sanctions were never meant to be a deterrent. And then people pull up a list of clips in which everybody from him to Blinken is saying exactly that. You know, they're trying to retcon this thing because the narrative is getting away from him, and the narrative is all they have. The backlash from this has been spectacular. It's basically the American empire, such as it is, that I've spoken about for years, it relies on perception that it is the most trustworthy, the strongest, the most economically powerful in the world. And right now, with these sanctions, the embargoes, really, it's showing to the rest of the world that it is not trustworthy, that it is not, in fact, powerful, and that the economic consequences that are very real are showing how weak its actual economy, as opposed to the narrative economy, really is. I mean, when you have China saying, wait a second, you've confiscated Venezuelan assets, you've robbed Iran, you've seized Afghanistan's foreign reserves, you know, you're trying to steal from Russia, you're the number one economic bandit in the world. They said this on Tuesday. I mean, this is pretty unambiguous. This is not, you know, the Chinese are usually more circumspect than this. It's out there for the entire world to see. How can you be the world's fiat currency when nobody has faith in your currency anymore or in the goodwill of your government? They've literally done this to themselves. And okay. For what?
Okay.
For Ukraine?
Okay, we'll talk about that in the second half. Ben, we have 1 minute before we go to the break. I saw you nodding. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, I think the important point there, and it's absolutely accurate, is that the U.S. has relied on its dominance as the world's reserve currency with the U.S. dollar for generations now, and really since World War II, that has been the world's reserve currency. The problem is that at some point, the U.S. decided to weaponize that currency and use it as a military weapon against countries it doesn't like, and that you can only play that card for so long until the rest of the world realizes what you're doing and makes moves to unseat you from that position of power. That's what we're witnessing in real time.
Ramsey, also, we have the dollar weapon is using the dollar as a weapon against friends as well, not just enemies.
That's right. I mean, this whole idea of robbery, I mean, these, you know, back to the rules-based world order, and yet they do not hesitate to use their financial muscle to contain, isolate, and destroy anyone that would stand in their way. Even dictators like that, those of Egypt, for example, and others following the Arab Spring, the money that is confiscated from these countries, they are yet to be returned. So these countries, you know, this process started well before.
All right, Ramsey, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We got to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on globalization. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing globalization. Okay, let's go back to Washington, D.C. Neboisha, let's have no illusions here. We've talked a lot about globalization, which is a very valuable conversation. But this is a war against Russia. This is a Western war against Russia, minus, so far, nuclear weapons. But everything else is out there, okay? And irrespective of what happens in Ukraine, because I don't think American policymakers give a hoot about Ukraine one way or another, as long as it's a cudgel, okay? The sanctions against Russia will never be lifted, particularly by the Americans. Maybe the Europeans will, you know, they'll change their mood. But the Americans, you know, when they put down a sanction, they almost never lift it, okay? And irrespective of what happens in Ukraine, the struggle continues. And I think that's what, you know, I know you've been saying that a long time. I've been saying it a long time here. But now we're getting ample proof of this. Go ahead in Washington.
Well, that's the problem of Ramsey mentioned, you know, and Ben did as well. You can do this for a while, but at some point you run out of goodwill. You know, the old adage was you can take the money and run, but you can only do it once. Well, the Americans have gotten away with it repeatedly, as we've seen. But I do think at this point they've reached a hard stop because, again, the world is in such a state that Washington has been trying to rule it since the early 90s as the sole superpower that dictates to everybody what they must or must not do. And you had the situation where in early February, you had all of these U.S. officials going, every sovereign country has the right to choose. But the moment the kinetic warfare kicked off, they turned to, well, you must, to just about every country. You know, they go to India and say, you must do this. They go to China and say, you must do this. They go to Africa, you must. So wait a second, what happened to the every sovereign country has the right to choose? Oh, you don't actually believe that. You believe that every country has the right solely to submit to your dictates. Well, guess what? The rest of the world is going to get up and say no. Because somebody, in this case Russia, is actually successfully resisting this. And that's the thing, you know, human psychology is not a terribly complex thing. People are inclined to suffer while the suffering is endurable, so to speak. But once somebody starts to rebel, once somebody gets up and says no more, people will follow. And I'm not saying necessarily that's what Russia aimed to do. I'm not in Vladimir Putin's head. I don't know what he's thinking. But what I'm seeing is how the world is reacting to this. And you have all of these countries going, you've bullied us enough, no more. And it's a huge self-own by the U.S. establishment, yeah. Which, again, is not entirely unexpected, because these are old people who lack vision, who lack any sort of animating ideology, and are basically microwaving the Cold War tropes that they grew up with.
Yeah, Ben, I guess Nebojsa, our friend here, is the only person saying he's not in Vladimir Putin's head, because everybody else seems to know. I've always found that really bizarre. Russia's military adventure in Ukraine is failing. How do you know? What is their plan? Nobody. I mean, it's just ridiculous on its face. But, Ben, how is this being sold to Western audiences? I've always said, maybe I'm wrong, but, when you say this is all for democracy, that's only what the people inside the Beltway say. Nobody else really believes it, okay? I don't think they actually believe it. It's their cover for everything that we've talked about on this program. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, I think that most people would agree that it's, because that's just a slogan, right? It's about democracy in Ukraine. I stand with Ukraine. They'll paint their fingernails Ukrainian flag colors. You can do all that until you realize that now at the end of the month, you don't have enough paycheck for the bills that you have, because your gasoline costs are so high and your food costs are so high and your energy costs are so high. And you say, wait a minute, is all this so high because of a war in Ukraine? And all of a sudden, caring about that democracy across the world will dissipate very quickly. But I would take an unpopular opinion here about sanctions. I would say that I believe the U.S. will lift sanctions on Russia. I believe that will happen. And you can have me back on if I'm right or wrong, and condemn me or praise me either way. But here's what I believe. I believe it will happen because the U.S. has to save face at this point. Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, just said recently that the U.S. is already looking, that if there is an end to this, that we understand that part of that means lifting sanctions on Russia. Why would you say that? As you said, that is actually historically unprecedented. The United States does not do that unless you need to save face for the fact that the sanctions didn't work. Remember, the Biden administration said that this was about deterrence, and then it didn't work. Then they said it's about punishing Putin, but that hasn't worked. So if this comes to an end and the U.S. is able to say, we will withdraw sanctions, they can take a victory lap in the Biden administration and say, see, we didn't have to fire a bullet. We didn't have to send U.S. troops over, even though they've done all those things. We don't have to do that, because instead what we can do is we just use sanctions. We use the power and the leverage of a unified Western world. And so their goal is going to be to salvage the idea of utilizing sanctions. If they leave sanctions on and Russia continues to thrive with other countries, trade with China, trade with India, trade with Brazil, Venezuela, Iran, if Russia is able to do that, they are proving a blueprint for how U.S. sanctions policy has failed. So I believe that the U.S. will do it to save face.
Well, that is a very interesting, that's one of the most interesting propositions I've ever heard in the history of this program. I'm going to throw it to Ramsey in Seattle. It's fascinating what Ben is having to say, but I've never seen the empire say sorry. I've never seen the empire say they were wrong. I've never seen them do this, okay? Look, we had Victoria Nuland in the Obama administration, She's back to finish her job, okay? These people are fanatics. They're ideologically possessed. They're never going to say sorry, okay? And I've never seen has the U.S. ever said sorry to Southeast Asia for its war there? They're saying to the Middle East. Have they said it to the Palestinians? Have they said it to the Syrians? I can go on and on. I don't have enough time for all the people. So it's an interesting proposition. Do you think Ben's right, Ramsey? Go ahead.
No, I think it's very interesting, but I think these are changing times. So I think even for the Americans themselves, this is an uncharted territory. Because let's remember, the U.S. either instigates or directly or indirectly conflicts. So they are always prepared for the narrative that goes with these conflicts. We call this in academia superstructures, meaning that they create the language, they create the mode of thinking, they bring the talking heads to articulate American agenda, and the whole world has to respond to that. But this is different because for the first time, it was another country that was actually taking action, and not just that, coming with their own superstructures, coming with their own language. In the meeting between Lavrov and Wang Yi, that was a very, very important meeting in March 30th. And I, you know, very simple discourse analysis of the kind of terminology used by these two leaders. They spoke of a multipolar world, a democratic world, a world of cooperation, striving for peace, upholding of security. And the very last priority was opposition to hegemony, meaning U.S. Western hegemony. So it means that those who have are opposing this U.S. hegemony are actually responding and articulating a whole new language, and they are not waiting for the Americans to take initiatives in order for them to respond. This is why I'm saying that this is a new reality. Even the Americans themselves don't actually have a long-term plan of knowing how to deal with the possible outcomes of this war.
You know, Nebojsa, before I went into media, I worked in finance, and I was always told never say, this time it will be different. Okay, that's kind of a rule. I actually went for life here. What do you think about the possibility of that? And I don't want to be cryptic here, but I think you'll know what I mean. Can we finally retire appeasement in Munich and all of this? Because this is what Ben and Ramsey are saying. You know, I mean, appeasement here. I mean, you know, all you have to do is, you know, pull out all, how many? 51 intelligence professionals saying that, you know, the laptop wasn't real. Are these same 51 going to come out and say, yes, we have to totally reassess the global order? I don't see it happening, but I'd love to be wrong. Go ahead.
They will not admit it, but never underestimate the power of the American media complex to spin a narrative to their liking and make themselves out as victorious. I think what Ben said does it does look possible. I'm not sure how likely, but it does look possible, because what is more likely to happen is once things start, you know, the wheels off the bus start falling off, and you know, the couple of people left in Washington with any brain cells realize that the U.S. hegemony is falling apart, they will go, oh, you know, quick, spin another narrative how we really won. And they will try to paint this as, oh, no, it was really a great victory, you see, like they've done with everything else domestically. I'm not sure if they'll be able to sell this narrative overseas. But again, to them, everything is narrative. Everything is spin. It doesn't matter what reality is. It only matters what they, you know, launder through the media. And that's how they've been functioning for decades. Now, obviously, you know, that sort of distinction is at the heart of the current conflict. You have Putin calling the West an empire of lies and trying, you know, and other countries going, well, wait a second, what is real matters, what is fake does not. And so it's a clash between reality and the fake. And, you know, the American Empire's default response is, well, let's just made up more fake stuff to you know, paint ourselves as the perpetual winners. And again, this is how I see the possibility of what Ben said actually coming through. They'll say, oh, no, we've really won. Here's what we're going to do and everything's going to be fine.
Okay, what you're saying is that they're going to pull tear a page from the Romans, you know, no matter what the situation is, just declare victory and go home. Ben, you're nodding your head. Because this is your thesis, so defend it. Go ahead.
Right, I was going to say, that was my point. I never said that they would say sorry, right? I heard that word being used around.
Fair enough.
They'll never say sorry. What they have to say is, we won. And they also have to lift those sanctions at some point because of the costs associated. We talk a lot about gas and the cost of gasoline, but there's so much more. The biggest cost that's going to be passed on to the American consumer in the next couple of months is going to be the cost of fertilizer. Most of the urea fertilizer that comes from Russia that was supposed to go to American farmers is not reaching them. That means the cost of fertilizer, which has to happen 2 to 3 times a year on commercial farms, has tripled, quadrupled in price. That cost is being passed on to restaurants and it's being passed on to consumers. In a couple of months, when you go to the grocery store and there's either food shortages here or food is beyond the ability of most people to be able to purchase it, the U.S. has to fix that. They can't just say democracy and people be okay with it. Listen, people are okay with being involved in foreign entanglements in the United States because war does not come here.
Yep.
Since going all the way back to the Korean and Vietnam wars, right, there is no real price paid at home for all the wars and the war machine that the United States has launched. This is the first war where there is a price that's about to be paid at home in terms of the economic cost. And Americans are very fickle. they will move on very quickly, and they will abandon the idea of this is a just cause if it's hurting their personal life. The Biden administration won't be able to survive that. They know they have to lift the sanctions, but they have to simultaneously take a victory lap, and the media will allow them to do that. They'll say, yeah, see, this is the peaceful strategy, the calm, cool-headed Biden versus the frantic, crazy Putin, yep, and look, we won. They have to be able to say they won.
All of these people that got us into this mess will somehow probably find themselves promoted upward.
Promoted.
Always that happens. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, Seattle, and in Atlanta. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.